Hello and welcome everyone to the Cane and Rinse podcast. This is Volume 13, Issue 612 on X-Men Origins Wolverine. I'm James Carter. Joining me in this issue we have Tony Atkins.
Hello.
Leah Haidu.
Hi, hi.
And Carl Moon.
Hey ho.
I like it.
So we are talking X-Men Origins Wolverine, which... so much to talk about, but we'll start off by saying the game is a third-person hack-and-slash adaptation-adjacent game of the hit movie with which it shares a name. I'm going to put a spoiler warning here. It's not really potential spoilers so much as there will be spoilers for X-Men Origins Wolverine games, plural, and film. And kind of, let's face it, we're going to need to talk a little bit about the whole film series that 20th Century Fox have put out to date to some degree. Not maybe spoilers, but in order to be able to talk about this, there's sort of lineage there to the multiple series of films that are now kind of in the X-Men universe or connected to it under the X-Men banner. So why did I force, broadly... Carl, Leah, and Tony to play this game or replay this game. We'll find out whether they've played it before in a sec. My history with this and the reason that I chose it is I played this in 2010 in January, so not right at release. I'd seen the film in cinemas when it came out, so months after that, but you know, fairly close to release on the Xbox 360. Over the course of a couple of weeks, which seems like I was really taking my time. I don't know what else was going on in my life then, but I don't know how it took me 2 weeks. And I've always thought of this as a surprisingly, as I said, surprisingly good game of a pretty mediocre film. And I kind of wanted to go back to it and see if that was the case. Why did I want to go back to it? Well, this was my choice for... this volume of Cane and Rinse, and I tried to look for games that it was the anniversary of. It's 15 years since this game and film came out, and it happens to be about 3-4 months before Hugh Jackman makes possibly his final appearance as Wolverine for the second or third time in Deadpool and Wolverine, the third Deadpool film that's coming out in July. And it just kind of seemed like that ties in nicely. We also have Insomniac's Wolverine game coming up in the next year or two. And I thought, well, this might be a good opportunity to kind of, you know, appraise, revisit what was considered a decent Wolverine game 15 years ago and see what we thought. So I played it on Xbox 360 originally. Rather than dig out PS3 or Xbox 360 from somewhere in a crate in a storage unit, I opted, as the game is no longer available on digital storefronts, to see if I could fire it up on my Steam Deck and get it running on a PS3 emulator. No instruction will be given. And it ran surprisingly well. I played it over the course of this week, which was a week where I had been playing so much Final Fantasy to try and finish it before we went on holiday this week, which I did. Took my Steam Deck with me, and whilst on holiday, had no problem putting a couple of hours each sort of night after we got back from our walking into this, and did not feel like it was a chore, did not feel like it was onerous, was quite happy to do so. I say all that because I'm about to hand over to some people who I think will be less enthused about the time they spent playing this game and preparing for this show. So that's where I'm at. Carl, how about you? What's your history with this game, and how much do you hate me right now?
I mean, a little bit more than usual, James, I'll be perfectly honest.
And that's a high bar to clear.
So, this is an interesting one because I saw your nomination for it and I was like, yeah, I've done that game, not a problem. thinking that I'd played this one, and it turns out I was actually getting it confused with X-Men, the official game. So, when I realised that I'd been essentially voluntold to talk about a game that I, in fact, hadn't played... I then picked it up on the PS3. I've very recently, at the time of recording this, moved house. I got a very nice present off my partner for my 40th birthday, which was a nice OLED TV. I finally got that in my games room. So I thought I'll really put it through its paces and connect the PS3 up to it and play the visual spectacle that is X-Men Origins Wolverine, and I played that through over roughly 2 weeks, but that was with travel for work and stuff getting in the way. And also, unlike James, I did have a problem putting a couple of hours into it each and every night that I had to. So I eventually got through it and finished it a couple of nights before the recording of this podcast. Yeah, turns out it wasn't the game I originally nominated myself for. So that was fun.
So I tricked one person into being here. Leah, did I trick you into being here?
No, I did this to myself. And this game inspired me to go back through the traffic lights and really think about what I'm doing. No, it didn't, but I still might do that. So I remember liking this game. I played it in 2009. I went back and looked at my Xbox achievements. And yeah, I played and finished it over the course of about a week in 2009 for the Xbox 360. This time around, I'm sure we'll kind of mention that this is not really available on any digital storefronts or anything like that currently. So I purchased my 360 is currently a little bit on the fritz, and it's not backwards compatible anyway. So, no. Or actually, maybe it is. I tell a lie.
It's
maybe
not.
It was.
No,
that...
it's not.
Oh, it's not. Okay, because I was gonna say it's either that or it was that it is backwards compatible, and it was just that the PS3 version was cheaper. So I picked up a PS3 copy, and played it on my PS3 as well. My PS3 that I hooked up, this is becoming a theme, my PS3 that I hooked up and tested and put through its paces last year for Condemned 2 Bloodshot, a game that is worse than this.
That was a bad choice.
I feel bad for my poor PS3. I'm like, you can sleep except when I need you for these things. But yeah, so I replayed it on the PS3 over, I don't know, maybe it was a pretty short time period. It was maybe 3 or 4 sessions. My incentive was that I've had a really packed podcast schedule for the first part of this year. I'm coming into like a month break and I really wanted to start Persona 3. So I'm like, all right, I just have to get through Wolverine and then I can go play something good. So I thought that I remembered this game being not that bad. I did not enjoy it as much as I kind of remembered doing at the beginning. So I was not tricked, but also I'm not that happy. So we'll chat about why, but that's my where I stand.
Two happy customers. Let's make it a hat trick with Tony.
I volunteer myself. What can I say? Apparently traffic lights are traffic lights. So I know I hadn't played this game, although I was very aware of this game. This is one of those games that it was a fairly big deal at the time. I feel like I know it a lot because back when, you know, people played 360 games for achievements, this was one of the more easier ones, i.e. it could be done in like 12 hours, which back then was a reasonably short period of time, but it was one I never got to. And you know, I was fairly happy just to leave it as that being the case. I had no real desire to go back to an old X-Men game, but I put myself down for the show just to see how a game like this played, you know, in 2024. And yeah, stay tuned for how a game like this plays in 2024, I guess is the answer. But no, I played it on the 360. I had to dig out my 360 from storage and buy a physical copy in a store because I couldn't find it anywhere else.
Like it's 2009.
I know, and I think I paid like £12 for it, which is like seems relatively expensive, but hey.
That was it. I paid $30 for that PS3 copy.
Exchange right
so,
now.
Yeah, interestingly, right, we had some forum feedback. We'll read it later on, but from Andrew Elmore, one of our frequent contributors, in terms of forum feedback, and he said that he had to search around for a copy that wasn't almost retail value for the game. So yeah, I think maybe it's just more expensive over there. I know the PS3 version, as is often the case, is more expensive than the Xbox 360 secondhand over here. But yeah, it's more in the £10 to £20 range than $30-$40. So yeah,
does go to show though our changing habits, because like you, Jones, I was like, oh, okay, well, I fancy picking this one up on Steam or something like that via a digital marketplace, and I can just play at my Asus ROG Ally and just, you know,
yeah,
kind of just chill on the sofa. It seems that kind of non-taxing game that I could do that. Just not available in any digital storefront whatsoever to even attempt that. And of course, locked to old hardware just means that, you know, I can't stream it from anything. I'll do it. It's like, okay, I'll do this the old way. I'll sit here with my pad that's completely dead and now just permanently hooked to the console and getting it going. Yeah.
Raven Software is the developer of the PS3, Xbox 360, and Windows versions of this game. The worldwide release was 1st of May 2009, which coincides with the film. That is a release on PS3, Xbox 360, Windows, PC, PS2, Wii, PSP, DS, and mobile. So that's 8 different SKUs in parallel development and release all on the same day. So no staggered release date. Everything got the same release date. As mentioned, that this was not on Steam and is no longer available for digital purchase on any storefronts. That's as of 1st of January 2014. That has not changed. The only way to get hold of this kind of legitimately is to buy a second-hand copy. But the only other ways are to emulate this game, which I successfully did. The uncaged edition versions we're going to be talking about here are far easier to find in that respect. The other versions of the game are pretty much all, to some degree, considered kind of lesser versions, one way or another.
Yeah, and just on that, before we get talking, having watched some YouTube videos of the PC version up and running, like, it's a shame because actually it clearly runs at a lot higher resolution. That's one of my, you know, one of the things about the 360 version. It's, you know, it's pretty much like a Vaseline screen throughout, and understandable. It's just a period of the time. But the PC version is, you know, some fairly clean, crisp, and sharp assets running at a decent frame rate. So it's a shame that it's just not easy enough to come past.
Yeah,
I would take the comparison of your Vaselined Xbox 360 version and hazard a guess that you probably had a few more frames than the PS3 version, which seemed to run somewhat shy of completing all of them.
So this is all really interesting to hear, because I have absolutely seen, I think, someone who, whether it's via mods or whether it's just upscaling, played it at, basically they were saying this was 4K. It's like the textures are not in this game remotely 4K. But they were playing a PC, either modded or upscaled version. And yeah, there is stuff in this game that looks pretty good. Certainly when you're playing it on an 800p screen on a Steam Deck, emulating PS3, which is notoriously difficult to do, and I never saw single-digit frame rates.
You're a very lucky chap.
It definitely wasn't like solid 30, but It was above 20 absolutely all the time. I definitely saw slowdown a couple of times. And there were emulation glitches because it compiles shaders like dynamically as it's going through when it loads a new area. So there's definitely times where it chugged to while it was doing that. But that's emulation. That's not the game. So actually, you know, it speaks to we kind of needed a next-gen version. I can't believe I'm here being a champion for next-gen port of this game.
But I don't even think we needed this port, this version of it, let alone another version. But, you know, you're talking about not being able to drop down in 20 frames a second. Like, I'm going to be living with some form of PTSD from remembering the helicopter come through the window on the level with Gambit, because I genuinely thought my PS3 had locked up.
Oh, dear.
Well, I genuinely thought my PS3 had locked up. It stopped on a frame that long.
I fortunately didn't have anything quite that bad, but I am not a person who normally really notices frame rate stuff. Yeah. Like, I can tell the difference if you put them side by side, obviously, but like, I'm not, it's not something that I am really looking for most of the time. But this game, woof, it ran really rough in a lot of places where, I mean, you get the stereotypical thing, you know, that I thought maybe we had fixed a little bit by this point. There's too many enemies on the screen that you are fighting, and so everything just starts to run with really low frame rates, and it just looks super choppy, and it doesn't feel good.
One of my favorite things is the fact that in chapter one, you have the enemies come in and throw a smoke grenade.
Yeah.
They never did it again in the entire game because I think they learned something that day. Those machines were not made for smoke effects.
It's really... I definitely remember some of that from the Xbox 360 version when I played it, but I was surprised it played relatively well on Steam Deck. As I say, getting hold of the PC version, obviously there are people out there who've got it because they're putting up full playthroughs on YouTube of that. I have put in the notes, minor resolution and performance differences only between these versions. I feel like I should amend that now, but in terms of the differences between the versions, PS3, Xbox 360, and PC are the same game. They're all called the Uncaged Edition to separate them from the other versions of this game. But, broadly the same game, performance maybe not so much. PS2 and Wii versions are largely similar. The argument was that those were much more likely to be owned by kids, and therefore they graphically scaled them back for the power of the machines, but they put in less mature content. There's some side-by-side stuff I've seen where, like the opening cutscene when you see Wolverine's claws go straight through the wall in someone's head. They go through the wall and into someone's head, but they don't come out the other side. So you get the implication of what's happened, but just not the blood dripping claws coming through the head. Stuff like that. The combat is necessarily kind of scaled back, but there are different combat sequences, not to the extent of some of the other versions of this, which are just different games. But they're broadly trying to aim for the same thing. Again, movie tie-in game, licensed game, you kind of want it as many places as possible so that people can play it. And this was just close enough to... Wii certainly, obviously, was still, current-gen console. PS2 was still widespread enough. The PSP version, I was really surprised to see the opening cutscene absolutely there on the PSP version. I didn't play it, I just watched some YouTube walkthrough clips. But after that, it's a completely different game. The flashbacks are to infiltrating hand bases in an adamantium mine. It retains some of the modern day stuff, like the bar fight with Sabretooth, Alkali Lake escape, taking down Agent Zero, and Three Mile Island finale. But broadly, the actual game is different. It's not quite a 2D. It didn't look like. I didn't play it, so I don't know exactly how it feels. But it's a fixed perspective brawler, and it's got a completely different combat system that looks almost a bit more like the DS one in terms of meters and stuff rather than the other versions. The DS version I did play, it's a 2D brawler with platforming. The dog tags are literally laid out like they're coins in a Mario game. You're running along collecting them. It's weird. The rage attacks, you have to press L, the game freezes, Wolverine jumps out of the screen at you, the lower screen. You then whip out the stylus, not that easy to do in an action game, and start scratching your screen, let's be honest. If you're going to swipe the screen like that, you're probably going to end up scratching it. You start scratching your screen and claw marks appear where you're scratching, and the idea is to kind of juggle, bounce the enemies around the screen, and then that stops and you frantically put your stylus back in the console and try to pick it back up. As mentioned, the cutscenes are like cartoony hand-drawn stills with some weird like 3D animation that looks... The closest thing I can compare it to, because I've been playing it recently, is original Final Fantasy VII, like little polygonal chibi-looking characters. It's so weird. And then the mobile version, I don't know how they did this. The footage I watched, it looked like the PSP version. I don't know how mobiles in 2009 were doing that. They were also on-screen touch controls, which... might be worse than bad frame rate issues for how I could imagine playing this game.
And from that YouTube video you shared, it has a frame rate of all of 4 frames per second the entire time.
Okay.
It was quite incredible. Anyway.
Yeah. So that's a broad overview of like how different games coming out on all of these systems could be at kind of the peak of we want this game everywhere. Like, this was never going to be an exclusive, but to see how different they had to make this game to the point where you've got 4 different development studios 5 different development teams just making completely separate games, seemingly with some overlap, but not much, is kind of weird. Anyway, from now on, we're talking about the Uncaged Edition on the 3 platforms but it's on. So, our first piece of community feedback is from Seth on the forum. Jay, very kindly, at the beginning of each year, I guess, Volume puts up a thread for each and every of our issues, each game we're going to be covering. And there is one for this, which we've obviously used for some of our community feedback. There is one for every other issue in the upcoming 37 issues that are coming up. Quick maths, I think. 38. So yeah, Seth went on to that thread, left some feedback, and we're going to read that right now. You can do the same for any upcoming issue. Please do. Seth says, X-Men Origins Wolverine was one of the biggest surprises of its era, as what could have been a rubbish tie-in for a terrible film turned out to be a really fun hack-and-slash adventure that almost seemed embarrassed to be carrying its dud of a name. It's not a perfect game, but if you want a mindless action adventure to see you through a weekend, I think you can't go wrong by giving this a go. But aim for the Uncaged Edition. I've not played the standard version of the game or any of the other ports, and I don't want to. Proving perfectly that calling your only edition of the game on the platform the Uncaged Edition is weird. It sounds like there should be a standard version, and the Uncaged Edition is it. So that's confusing, but yeah, the other ports I cannot recommend from what I've seen or played. I actually have, or Anne-Marie has, the Wii version, but again, I wasn't digging the Wii version out to try and play with Nunchuck and Wiimote, which doesn't
Coward.
Have enough buttons on it for anything like the... Like, that must be more like the DS version to play, as far as I can like.
I'm sorry, James. The Wii version has enough buttons to cover it because you only need one when you play X-Men Origins Wolverine.
XXX.
Or Square.
We'll come back to that because I disagree. I can cheese my way through a lot of this game with triangles, it happens. which is the hallmark of any good...
Oh, sorry, yes, I forgot about the shield enemies.
Those guys, seriously, I know we're not talking about specific enemies, but the only enemies that posed me any danger whatsoever were those guys with the shields.
they were just so
annoying. Anyway, sorry, that was what that made me think of.
the trauma of remembering those enemies.
The literal only one, yeah. So reviews very quickly. I want a curio. If you Google, as I did, Metacritic X-Men Origins Wolverine, the game comes up first. That seems bizarre. Like, that does not ever happen. Usually you have to actively put game in there to try and not get the movie Metacritic. But for whatever reason, this one comes up top. Maybe just a sign that people like this more. I don't know. So the Metacritic for the 3 Uncaged Edition versions, all in the 70s, the highest the PC on 77, the lowest the PS3 on 73. The Wii and DS versions are in the 50s, the PSP is 60. So, again, we're talking about the Uncaged Edition because it is the one when people say this game's surprisingly good, this is the one that they mean, not the others. Not to say that you shouldn't, you know, investigate those, but maybe YouTube's the way to go. Users on Metacritic and IMDb, similarly positive, 8.1 on Metacritic users, 7.9 from IMDb users, did pretty well. So VG Charts is the only reference I had for sales. They've tallied up 2.2 million sales. PS3 and Xbox 360, roughly equal, fairly high up. PC is basically zero because that would have all been digital sales, I guess.
It was all pirated.
Or at least they didn't actually count box sales. And then all of the other platforms around about 200,000 each. This excludes Japan. It's only physical copies. Not every country reports. Blah, blah, blah. But 2.2 million sales is what they've estimated. That's the only sales figure I have for you, which is not bad, given it probably is going to be significantly higher than that. So let's start talking about that there game. We're not going to be exhaustive about, you know, going through the story or anything, but I want us to just pick up the stuff that kind of comes to mind, the stuff that we want to mention in regards to this. I figure we start off with mechanics. Why not start off where this game, quote-unquote, shines, I suppose. Mechanics are, it's a hack and slash game, so it's very combat focused, but one of the first things you have to sort of learn is that there are character upgrades. Those come in the form of skills, which are just upgrades to the abilities and health and regenerating health and damage that Wolverine does. You get a couple of points when you level up, and increasingly as you want to level up each category, the point total needed for them goes up as well. There are then mutagens, which, much like many other games have, you've got three slots and you've got, I think, about 10 different ones. You pick which ones go in. As you go through the game, they're found essentially as collectibles. You see like a spinning brightly coloured disc hidden away in a corner, and you go and grab that. Depends, you can kind of tailor it to your playstyle somewhat. I don't think they necessarily make a massive difference. And then combat reflexes, which I got a notification when I maxed out one of them and then basically paid no attention to for the rest. Those are the progress bars that basically are filled by defeating certain enemies. Like, each enemy type's got its own progress bar. And then as you fill up each level of the combat reflex for each type of enemy, your damage against that enemy goes up. So it's kind of like you're learning how to fight the enemy. Just kind of weird, because you're fighting those enemies are increasingly weak compared to you anyway. So
it's also odd, because like that stuff, yeah, by the time you get to the end, so once I completed the end of the game, I'd only maxed out a couple, and I had two or three of them like still in the single digits, only just going into the double digits, which I find doesn't really affect the gameplay that much. But it's just like one odd thing, because you're done with the game, you haven't actually, you've not become any stronger. The only way, obviously, you can become more stronger is to replay individual levels and focus on those individual characters, by which point you're already pretty damn master of the game, so the challenge is all but irrelevant anyway.
Weird though, right? Because when you complete the game, you unlock hard difficulty, but then if you start hard difficulty, it wipes everything you've earned. So you literally have to go level select to level those up. And I played it, I completed it through, and I haven't maxed out any of those.
And even having the mutagens behind a collectible thing. So even if you wanted to kind of tailor your character quite individually one way, I found myself like, well, I'm only 2 points into this and really I want three, but I actually don't know where the third one is hidden within this world. Have I missed it behind me? Is it in front of me? Was it as the level before, or is it yet to come? So it's just like a really odd way of actually kind of presenting that stuff to the player, as in, well, do you want a bit more variety in your gameplay? Do you want to tailor it without actually allowing them to tailor it, because you're hiding it behind stuff? Now, as somebody who was kind of actively seeking out every collectible, even
not like you, Tony.
No, but even I'm really annoying. I missed one dog tag. No idea where. I would have to replay the entire game, because who knows?
No, you can just chapter selected.
Get to that. You can chapter select it, but it doesn't tell you where what you may have missed in that level. So you just guess, right? But even me,
we'll definitely come back to it with collectibles as well.
No, but I will say, even though I was going for every collectible, I still didn't find a number of the mutagens to actually level all those up. So, Christ knows.
Yeah. So those are kind of the upgrades you're making as you go through the game, in order to be better at the combat, is basically the idea. The main comparator, I've already mentioned it a bunch of times. This game, when being reviewed, almost everyone was saying, oh, this is like God of War. That was not a series I had played up to this point. So when I played this, I had not played God of War at all. I had no idea what really to expect. I had fun with this. I have never had fun with any of the original God of Wars. I didn't play them till years later. Maybe I was just kind of past it, I don't know. But the original God of War games that this was based on, I have had more fun with this than those. I am maybe the only one.
Respectfully disagree.
So I would say the similarities come from God of War, certainly the original run of titles, was very, very kill roomy. You know, you would come into an area, the room had almost shut down, you had to clear out X amount of enemies, although that's a sign of a game of its time.
I was going to say that, sure, yes, agreed, but also that's hardly the only game.
No, but if I think about God of War, very much, you know, melee, hand to hand combat, like you could say that's the same as this. Obviously, there's that one thing where I can't remember what they call it, the Leviathans, where you jump up on top of them and you rip their heads off by pushing a button. That is very similar to stuff that would have been in God of War. And I think, you know, the moment I saw that, I was like, oh God, that's straight out of God of War. But yeah, I mean, tangentially linked between the games, that, but you could equally, you've even put on here, there's moments of Uncharted platforming that felt very Uncharted-y, kind of climbing up walls, jumping across ledges, platforming, but then it doesn't have the charm of Uncharted. So, you know, it's just basic mechanics that have similarities to other games within, you know, gaming, lecture.
I mean, I get the reference to God of War, but I mean, this is to God of War what Quop is to International Track and Field. Like, it's just not even in the ballpark of quality. Like, there's little touches where it's clearly influenced by other games, but it's not really gone far enough for it to be valuable. So you mentioned the Leviathan, which is like the one boss that you fight, who isn't like a Marvel character, who you fight at least 10 of them throughout the game, and you pull its head off like you do in God of War 3, right? Where you, like, you know, that's the God of War where you do it. And then it doesn't really come or do anything that God of War did prior to it. And then, you know, you mentioned that it hasn't got the charm of Uncharted because you crawl on some beams or climb up some ropes. I mean, I'm just not having it. Like, it's you know, we've had third-person action brawlers before God of War and stuff. Like, this is just very much a movie tie-in that at least tried to do some stuff where it looked at its peers and games that did things better, but didn't have either the direction or the allowance to really shine. But then you can say it's because it's tied into a movie license, but then it does a lot of stuff that isn't in the movie. So, like, it just... I think for every one good thing this game did, it does two things badly. So trying to talk about it in the echelon of God of War games, I'm not going to have it.
I don't think anyone's classic franchise. I think they're just saying there is similarities in the combat style that could be there. But that's, you know, I don't think anyone's saying.
Yeah, no, it was very much mentioned as kind of like, if you want a touchstone for how this game plays, like, third-person hack and slash, you could think like Devil May Cry or a year after this game, Bayonetta. It's not like those games to me. Like, it's not,
it's nothing like
that precise. It's not that dynamic. There's not that enemy variety. The game that people pointed to as a bit more of a can be played mashy, but not got the complexity of God of War, but it's aiming for something like God of War in terms of its combat. And I have to say, I can see it. Having probably 5 or 6 years after this, tried to play God of War, got an hour in, stopped. Tried to play God of War 2, got an hour in, stopped. Tried to play God of War Ascension, got about 5 minutes in and stopped. I didn't get a flavor for what those games were. I couldn't stomach them. Just couldn't. But the combat I did play, I thought, oh, I can see why people said X-Men Origins Wolverine was kind of going for it.
I think the other similarities that I think can come from that is, although I'm not sure this stacks up in 2024, but the game is violent.
Yep.
But it's, I don't know whether 15 years of, like, just how far games have pushed violence now. Because, without the context of playing this in 2009... like, did this feel ultra-violent in 2009? Because, you know, heads come off, arms come off, limbs come off, people are, you know, falling apart left, right and centre. There's actually one of the more funnier cutscenes where he takes a helicopter pilot and puts him into the helicopter, well, the rotors of the blood, yeah, the rotors, and his head comes flying off, and, you know, that made me chuckle. But, you know, I was kind of playing through this and just going, this feels like it's trying to be ultra-violent. At the same time, in, you know, 15 years down the line, comes off as like a Saturday morning modern day cartoon. And it's
I think part of the thing, with the violence was probably that it was directed at what was supposed to look like more realistic violence, like grittier violence, if you want to think of it that way. It's not something like it is over the top, but it's
not
it's over the top,
yeah, it's not,
you know,
like, oh god, yeah,
Right, exactly. So I think maybe that was kind of what people were seeing. They're like, oh man, this is, you know, like Wolverine would do in the comics or whatever.
Yeah, that's it. It's an homage to the comic, isn't it? That's what it feels like. But all the violence, I've gone back and I've, for my sins, started replaying again, just to see if I can see it with a different lens. And the really, to use the old cliche, hyper-violent parts of it are all really front-loaded into that game.
Yeah, it's the opening cutscene, and then almost one of the first things you do is leap on that helicopter, pull the pilot out, and stick his head into the turbine.
But
rotor.
Equally, I think we're at a time when, you know, the Marvelization of comic book characters, it feels like you can't have this level of dismemberment. Yeah, in that kind of this new culture of what comics are. Now, I think Deadpool obviously Deadpool goes against, and actually I think the Warner Brothers stuff is, you know, it was a bit more different. But I think, you know, when you talk about the Insomniac Marvel game, Insomniac Wolverine game that is in development, you know, one of the first things on people's lips is like, it better be violent, there better be dismemberment. Yeah. And when that kind of leak happened, and there didn't seem to be dismemberment, people are going, oh my god, there's not dismemberment. It's like, oh, but that's like 3 years from bloody being released, so who the hell knows. But equally, I think that, you know, the audience for, you know, that character in particular demands some sort of dismemberment. So
especially, you know, when the most kind of famous, outside of comic books, the most famous iterations of that character are the animated series, where obviously you don't get that. Like, you get him pulling out his claws every 5 minutes. We're watching it at the moment, pulling out his claws every 5 minutes. And he will only ever cut off something that does no damage to...
Mm-hmm.
It's either a robot or a robotic arm, or it's he will break someone's weapon. He obviously can't actually stab someone with his claws, which is a declawing of that character. And then also the...
Puns.
You noticed.
Sorry.
And then the X-Men films, where again, there are moments like, you know, the X-Men 2... mansion scene where he pulls out his claws and shoves them straight into someone's chest. It's still bloodless, but people, like, I remember the Empire movie review for the first X-Men film. They used to have like a little almost like graph in the bottom corner of the review that was like their emotion or their excitement during a film. And it was just almost like flatline, snicked, it went up.
I remember flatline, that. It was good.
Snicked, it went up. And that was how they judged that first film. Like, not how they, that wasn't the rest of the review, but they wanted that in there to say the highlights of this film were when Wolverine pulls out his claws. And for people who are a fan of that character in the comic books, that version, as enjoyable as I think Hugh Jackman is, could never be until, as Carl, you said, arguably Logan, could never actually be the full-blooded version of that character, just because they needed it to be PG-13. And
well, this is where they've really struggled, haven't they, with the kind of the movies and the games and back and forth. You know, the movies are now diluted versions of what we've seen in the games. The games have been diluted versions of movies that are already diluted based upon the comic books. Now, anyone who's actually read any of the Wolverine comic books, because I think, what, the Wolverine comic books are like 50 years old this year, I think. Which I'm just saying, that's more of a relevant time frame than 15 years for this game. that was really, I mean, those comic books are really violent.
Yeah. But depending upon the comic book, obviously, when he appears in, you know, other characters' comic books, maybe not as quite as violent as he would be, but certainly, I mean, even there are front covers of Wolverine comic books that you look at and you're like, this was on display in a comic book shop, really?
I guess to circle back round to my point, though, is I wonder whether some of the more kind of favourable reviews towards this is actually, you know, they completely did lean on a more adult-themed comic book superhero representation of a game, which wasn't necessarily guaranteed. I'm not sure there was too many out there doing exactly that. So I think, you know, there was some love for it. I like an adult version of a comic book franchise in a game form. This is, you know, this is some good stuff. Yeah, so...
So one thing I did want to mention, sort of combat-wise specifically, they went with regenerating health. Makes sense, it's Wolverine. There was apparently internally at Raven a lot of discussion of how they go about, in a sort of similar sense to Superman, how do you have a character that can't die have a game over screen? And they tried to avoid it. they wanted to consider mini games so that when you get like grievously injured to the point where you might be incapacitated, Wolverine can be knocked out, for example. Maybe you have to play a mini game to kind of wake him back up. Yeah.
Sorry, but there, I had to laugh that Wolverine can take a rocket from a can take a rocket from a helicopter, full bore, not a problem. Someone hits him over the back of the head with a butt of a gun. Guy's knocked out.
And he's knocked out, yeah, absolutely.
Like, what?
Through his adamantium skull, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
My favorite part of the regeneration was that his shirt regenerates also, yeah. But only sometimes.
Yeah, tremendous.
Like, it doesn't seem to have a whole lot of correlation with when his body actually regenerates. Sometimes he's wearing a shirt, and then in the next scene, he's not. Same thing the other way around. I don't know. I just...
On mine, for a whole level, his white shirt kept regenerating, but literally only to, like, just above his belly button. So for the entire level, he was running around with a crop top.
Oh, brilliant. So I looked for this after your comment about it, Leah, and I seemed to notice that the most common time his shirt would regenerate was in between, like, different levels. Like,
yeah, and
it would go through
also.
A load or cutscene or whatever, and he would then have it back on. The thing that, so occasionally I would have like a little white sort of necklace around that was the only bit of the shirt that was left, which was just weird. But the other thing is his shirt can be completely torn to shreds, will magically reappear. His jeans and boots, completely indestructible.
Good
like
stuff.
There's
They're
no
actually
damage
laced
to
with
those.
Adamantium as well. You kind of wonder why they didn't just put people in adamantium suits, but I guess that's what you get.
That reminds me, you talking about the necklace around his chain. I remember going down a lift, like it was a really, really long lift scene. And his necklace completely freaked out, or his dog tags completely freaked out and were going all over the place. But what made that so funny was that the scene was so long that it actually, there was a text that came up on the stream, came up on the screen that said, streaming in level. I was like,
I got that a couple times.
Streaming. I was like, nice, just like really honest. Just yep.
Yeah, you can't even hide it at this point.
No. We'll just let you know. Like you don't have to wait until you see Kratos sidle between two very narrow cracks in rock to know that it's loading. We'll just tell you it's loading. So the other thing that they discussed was that Wolverine would never be like knocked out, wouldn't get a game over. He'd just be captured and then have to kind of break out and resume the level from where he was. Anyway. All of this to say they had ideas for how to avoid a game over screen, and what they decided on, they would just give you a game over screen.
Time I ever game overed was when I fell off of things, which happened a couple of times. I had two or three game overs. I never game overed in combat, playing on just whatever the default difficulty was. Yeah. So, it's not that it's easy to die in those games or in the game, but it's interesting. I mean, they could have just said, okay, he never dies, and then they might have had to rely more heavily on stuff like platforming and that kind of thing, because you have to have some kind of danger, I guess, but I don't know what the solution is there. I don't think this is a bad one. I think it's fine, because you can, if you there is stuff in the Wolverine kind of overall lore that I'm pretty sure that at some point he has been reduced to basically atoms and has come back from that. It just takes a while, you could just get him to the point where yeah, he's still alive. He's not dead or anything, but it's going to take too long for him. Yeah, it's going to take too long for him to recover that he would not be able to actually do whatever he needed to do. So,
which was the idea that the game over screen was essentially meant to be a mission fail screen, and then you go back to a checkpoint
that,
and replay.
That makes more sense.
It's just funny that they considered how different a character like Wolverine was, and then just gave him regenerating health, which other games have anyway, particularly some shooters, and a game over screen. But it's not death, it's just mission failed. It's like, so we netted out with the same thing. We discussed that this character is different and you'd need a different approach to how failure would work, and it nets out the same thing as every other game. Okay. Weird. I don't know. I just felt odd about that. Hearing that they discussed so many different ways of doing it, and their solution was, we'll just do the same thing.
Well, I think, ultimately, I think the representation of what they showed on screen of him like having bits of flesh blown off him that would regenerate as you push through was a good enough to say, like, you know, he's not your average bear. Like he has some techniques here.
I'd love to see a modern version of that.
Yeah, there was a lot of times I was thinking, okay, well, you know, what will this new modern Wolverine look like? You know, what aspects of this, you know, will they learn from and take? And yeah, if nothing else, it's made me more excited to see what an Insomniac version of 2026 version of Wolverine will look like, because, you know, it's a good concept.
Yeah. I will say that, I mean, regenerating shirt aside, I did think it was kind of impressive for the time that he did regenerate physically. Like, it wasn't just your health regenerates. It actually had that visual representation of, you know, sometimes I can see his spine and then it just kind of comes back gradually. I thought that was a nice touch.
I think my favorite one of that was when he gets handcuffed basically in front of one of the scientists, and his version of that is literally just pulls the entirety of his wrist skin off and you're left with the adamantium frame, and the scientist looks and goes, yeah, shit, oops. Like, yeah, like, oops, that really wasn't a great plan, was it? But
I think the battle damage Wolverine, it reminded me of there was a version of the He-Man figure where he had like a stomach panel that if you hit hard enough, it would spin round and show more damage. That sort of thing. Also, as we've already mentioned, Batman Arkham Asylum, they did that with his, particularly his cape, but his whole costume throughout the game to kind of show the progression of the night and how desperate things were getting. Here, obviously, he regenerates. I did have one funny cutscene where he sat down and had a bloody nose. It wasn't like his nose was missing, it was just red. Because the blood hadn't cleared from that yet, but it definitely made it a more interesting look, and to be able to see the damage on the character. Yeah, you've got a health bar up in the corner, but you kind of get a sense of how badly you're doing in the fight just from how Wolverine kind of looks and how much damage he's taken and how much shirt he's got left. So, you know,
it also felt really cool walking towards enemies that are just firing the rifles at you over and over again, and you can see the holes appearing in your back as you just keep walking towards them. Before going square, 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 square.
These guys are dumb, because if I see... I mean, maybe if you have, like, a huge group of people that are all on your side, you know, you're firing at this guy for a while. But once you have seen this guy literally rip apart all of your friends and basically take no damage from all of the things that they're firing at him... That last guy is not still going to be there. He is going to be running away.
But that's every game ever, right? We've all been. That was the big thing about even the Uncharted series. Is this is like, you know, come on, like, you just.
I do feel like Wolverine has maybe a slightly better reason for being a mass murderer than Nathan Drake does, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, at least Wolverine admits that he's not a good guy.
Yeah. Yeah. So you mentioned difficulty there, Leah. Like you, I played on normal. The two options are easy and normal. Normal I did not find particularly challenging. I think the only time I died not falling was there's a point where you've got to push a crate along a bridge and there's like they're firing rockets down at you. I got hit by a couple of rockets in quick succession and just died, fair enough. Not particularly difficult, I didn't find, in normal difficulty. There is a hard difficulty unlocked after the first playthrough. Unfortunately, as Carl mentioned, it wipes your progress, so you can't just New Game Plus in that way. We do have a piece of feedback from our Patreon. Again, each week there's a Patreon message put out to any of our Patreon supporters inviting feedback. We had one from Adam of the Revival and Extinction podcast, who said on difficulty... The difficulty spike when moving to hard was a good balance between having to use your head in combat and controller smashingly difficult with use of the block, dodge, and lunge being needed, as well as actually monitoring Wolverine's health. A constantly healing protagonist is always something difficult to get right that Raven Software managed to pull off, just like they did in their previous title of Marvel Ultimate Alliance. Whilst not a perfect game, this was a great game for myself with the time I spent with it.
Yeah, just before we move away from the combat, I know we we can reduce it down to single button. You can do pretty much most stuff, but there is some stuff in there. So like there's a couple of like these shotgun guys that come up that are basically they go invisible, which you have to use one of your senses to see. But there is there's a great technique where you can actually grab them, turn the shotgun back on them and actually blow their heads off, which always made me laugh. And that there is one or two different kind of, I'd say, combos that you can pull off that are pretty effective, and actually some of the more kind of the rage fury moves aren't terrible. Not that you
I like the one where you just spin in a circle with your claws out. I used that one a lot. I think it's the first one you get. I don't remember what it's called.
It's called claw spin.
Yeah, claw spin.
Okay, well that makes sense.
not cyclone, which is where you spin like a drill.
You spin vertically. It's weird. Yeah,
and there's a couple like if you just double jump up into the air, then hold down Y, you can do like a vertical smash into the ground, which causes a bigger shockwave. Like it isn't just single button. There is stuff there, and although I haven't played on hard because like everyone here, I still have maybe ambitions of just mopping up some of the bits I've missed because I've got most of the stuff in there. I do wonder whether hard would maybe emphasize a bit more on having to and to dig a bit deeper into some of the more advanced moves. But I certainly found myself, because I don't really feel like I was ever really in danger, I found myself, instead of just falling down that hole of just hitting the same button over time, I did want to variate. I did generally want to grab people and throw them into the environmental things. Always quite funny throwing people off ledges, even setting people on fire, always never a dull moment. I think maybe that's, I got a little bit more enjoyment out of it because I was just kind of like, this reminds me of games I played back at this era, which were very much go into room, kill people, move on. Yeah. Like now I feel like, and this isn't a criticism of now at all, because it's a completely different era, but you almost need to have a headspace of like, I want to play Dragon's Dogma 2 next. And it's just like, I'm looking at that and going, there's so many aspects of this that I almost need to look in advance and understand what you're getting into. This, it was like, I'm going to play this for 8 hours. I'm going to go forward and clear a room and go forward and clear a room and go forward. And it's just, it harkened back to a day where it's just like, you could just sit down and play a game for 2 hours, turn it off, and then come back a week later and go, oh yeah, this is where I left it, and just moved on again. And there was something a little bit more, remembering what games kind of work.
Pleasingly straightforward, but like you could call it simplistic. I get that.
Equally, back to what almost like Carl was saying, then you compare this to something like God of War, where that was the same aspect, but obviously so much more in between. So, I wouldn't even say.
Is this maybe a good time to talk about some of the glitches and problems that we had? Because I think that affected my combat experiences as well. So I don't remember this game being glitchy when I played it on the 360, but it sure was when I played it here. I started out pretty early with a glitch. You are in it's one of the jungle areas, and you're in kind of a circular room that has a door that's got like five different locks or kind of braces on it. And every time you defeat an enemy, one of those draws back. And the idea, of course, is you're supposed to kill all five of them so that you can go out the door. Well, the last two enemies I killed at the same time. And apparently you are not supposed to do that because it only drew back one of the locks. So there was one lock left and no more enemies. So I was just stuck. So that soft locked me. And that was fun. The other time, and this, I want to say, Carl, that I've heard you talk about having problems here as well. The gambit fight that you do on the kind of side of the building with the big neon letters.
Yeah.
That crashed on me multiple times. Once because there's like an area kind of down in between the letters kind of early in the fight. I knocked him down there and then he got stuck. So I couldn't hit him and he couldn't move. So another soft lock. Also had the same thing happen to me a couple of times, the other times that I had to reset. the fight is kind of scripted. Like, you do a certain amount of damage and then this thing happens. You do another certain amount of damage and this thing happens. Well, there's a part where you have to hit him and you're kind of on the edge of one of the letters and you pull yourself back up and the fight is supposed to go back on from there.
Yeah.
Well, I pull myself back up and he just kind of yeeted himself off the edge. So, and this happened to me more than once. Like, there was nothing left to do. Like, the little indicator, if I used my spidey senses, was going off the edge, like where he had jumped. And I'm like, I don't think I could go down there. So, you know, I'm like walking all over the place and I'm looking and, you know, nothing. He was just gone. So, this game is not very stable.
That final Gambit fight, I didn't have any of the problems that you and we'll hear from Carl in a second had, but it felt like it was on the cusp. Like, there was times mm-hmm. where I was falling down and getting back up and the game was like clearly not happy about it. and even when he jumped down, it was like, okay, it doesn't look like he's meant to be down there. It turned out he probably was, but the game felt like it was on the edge of like glitching one or other of us out of the zone. As it were.
Same as you, James. I didn't have any issues with it other than feeling like I should have issues. But
yeah.
Conceptually, it's quite a cool fight.
If it had worked,
reality
it
of it. Yeah, the reality of it is that it was just really weird. So I got wedged a couple of times where I shouldn't have been. And my character, rather than hitting the T-pose that you'd expect, went full Superman and just was horizontal in terms of how they moved around the level. And then would eventually suddenly just pop up vertical again and I could fight. But it just made that fight so, like, everything that you thought was quite cool about that fight was just taken away every time. There was like little bugs and glitches. And I mean, look, I don't particularly think any of the boss fights are that good because they all feel like they just take too long. But the Gambit one, just the Gambit ones.
It's also really weird because it's not representative of the film at all. And even, was it? what is the rather large dude afterwards? Blob, there you go.
Blob.
In the film, that whole scene happens to take place in a boxing ring. In the game, it's in a supermarket.
Yeah.
It's like...
In a supermarket with no leading.
It just made me think of Dead Rising
It's a 3D brawler type action game. This would be perfectly sensitive. Why is this happening in a supermarket?
I mean, maybe this was something that they had, that they changed.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Could be, because...
It's what they spent the extra 8 minutes.
So in the film, they give you the context there of... Wolverine's gone to find John Wraith. John Wraith runs a boxing club.
Uh-huh.
He's also helping one of his ex-colleagues, Fred, who's got
mental issues. Like,
They're not doing well. So it gives a lot of character, and that gives a lot of space to have those three back together. It's not just like a lot of the other scenes are, where it's just Wolverine meeting someone from the past or Sabretooth meeting someone from the past. It's got all three of them together, so you get a sense of who they are and how they relate to one another. It gives a really great character dynamic. In this case, Wolverine gets a message that he needs to go and find Fred Dukes because he's the one who knows where the island is, and then it just opens with Wolverine standing next to him in a supermarket, nobody else there, and Wolverine starts just mentioning his weight.
Which in the film, they actually go...
After he fell out of orbit, by the way.
Yeah, but even in the film, it's like, don't mention his weight because it's a real sore topic. It's like in the game, it's just whatever. I'm just going to go completely against it.
Yeah, like, cool dude. Just tell me some more fat jokes. I love this.
Really odd.
Yeah. It was not their best. But
I can imagine if you hadn't actually seen the film, why that scene would make... zero sense, and it makes pretty much zero sense having seen the film, because it makes no context to the film. It's just odd.
Yeah, I mean, in the film, you get that, like James was saying, you get that context and you get that kind of character moment. I don't even think that this was really necessary. Yeah. I think they just thought, hey, we've got this character that's in the game, or that's in the film, rather. I guess we should also have him in the game, because that's all that he's there for. You know, he's not
the irony.
You don't get any other story or even gameplay moments with him. It's just this one fight. And
no,
then
he's
gone.
Just suddenly turns up. And the irony is that's the best boss fight in the game.
So in terms of me saying that, actually, I think you can use triangle button to cheese this game. I think you can also use circle to cheese this game, because late in the game, what I found was, particularly in the Gambit scenes where you're climbing up the tower to get to Gambit.
Why fight?
Not fighting. I'm just throwing you all off. Like, it's not that easy to control where you're throwing someone, but you either throw them against a wall, then go over, pick them up, and throw them over the edge, or you just throw them over the edge, throw them over the edge, throw them over the edge, move on. Because the combat for me, the biggest issue I had with it was, I didn't die in the game. I never felt close to dying in the game. I don't need death to be the punishment, but I need some sense of challenge. And it wasn't challenging me not to just, yeah, with timing, because sometimes I would block, you know, try and get the perfect blocks, etc. But it wasn't getting me to make full use of the moveset. So at a certain point, I may as well just get rid of the enemies because it's going to take me less time. I'm still getting all the XP from it. And then what I found out was, even in the boss fights, but certainly with a lot of enemies as well, if you get them on the ground, you can press triangle. You can like swipe at them while you're stood over them, but you can then press triangle to leap up and do quite a lot of damage. It's part of the lunge chain as well. If you do a lunge chain into triangle, you do a lot more damage with that move than you do if you swipe at them. So what I found was, in like the Sabretooth boss fight and the Deadpool boss fight, I lunged at them,
yep,
knocked them to the ground, triangle, 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 triangle. I'm not kidding. I'm not trying to be facetious with this. The Sabretooth fight, I just triangled my way to the end of that fight. Like, that shouldn't... Like, some enemies do kick you off, but with the triangle move, it re-stuns them. So if you get the timing right on it, like, Deadpool eventually would teleport away. But I could still do that a lot more than I should, to the point where, why would I do anything else? Because this is the most effective way to get damage. It just seems like I needed it to require, like, push me to change up the way I'm playing a bit more. And when I found those cheese strategies, it was like, oh, okay, this makes sense as to why it wasn't pushing me to do more with the moveset, because they weren't considering that players would just do this stuff over and over again, which is a bit disappointing. Like, I enjoyed the combat broadly. I think it's hands down the thing about this game I enjoyed the most. But yeah, it's a little bit disappointing. It didn't just require a bit more of me. And I think that goes to enemy variety as well, with some different enemy types. Yeah, the shield guys are annoying, but at least it forced me to rethink how I was approaching some of those group fights when there was a couple of Goliaths in there as well. So,
yeah. I mean, that's James Dark Souls Carter talking about cheesing enemies, everyone.
Oh, I've cheesed my fair share of enemies. one of the things I wanted to just touch on is collectibles. So they had dog tags in, which were in hidden places, much like the mutagens were, much like the health upgrades were. The producer, Brian Pass from Activision, was interviewed at, I think that was at Comic-Con New York, but apologies if it's not. And he said one of the reasons they included the dog tags was that it would encourage people to go back into the game and replay levels to find them. The problem is, as Tony says, if you don't know where they are, the chapter select is the five chapters, each chapter therefore being a good couple of hours long, and you've no idea where in each of those chapters the dog tag might be missing. So you're essentially replaying the whole game to find it. And the question was asked of him, so what are the dog tags for? And the answer was, they give you experience. I mean, that's not what anything's for. Yes, I get experience, and as I go through the game, I get more experience. It's more than defeating a single enemy, but it's not more than I'm getting out of combat. It's a drop in the ocean compared to what I'm getting in combat. What's the meaning of the dog tags is what that question was. And what we got back was, gives you XP in it. And that's better, arguably, than the work logs, which are audio logs, that do give you some background story and you do get some information. But you've
say it's very nice that you don't have to stand in place to listen to the audio logs. Sure, it does not make sense, but it's nice.
but there's also no tracking those.
Yeah, but some of the audio logs are actually reasonably good and actually give you context of what's actually why you're in an area that you're in. But most people
Give you story, but they don't tell you whether you've already listened to a log. So I ended up listening to some multiple times as I went back through an area and hadn't realized because I was turned around that it was the same one. And there's also no way of tracking which ones you've heard. And again, this producer, Brian Pass, said, oh, well, that's going to give people incentive to go back and find the ones they didn't hear and get some more sort of tidbits of story. If you don't know which ones you haven't heard, you're going to have to listen to them all again. I'm not playing this game again to go and listen to 99% of work logs that I've already listened to and occasionally get one. It just, it showed a real misunderstanding for me of what collectibles and audio logs are meant to add to a game in terms of, like, replayability is not even really what they add to a game, I don't think. But
this is not an excuse, but I think that that's also part of the time period that this came out. A lot of games had not, even good games had not really figured out how to do this successfully a lot of the time.
I mean
collectibles is always one of those things, right? Like, very rarely do they add to the game, particularly the dog tags, which is really filler because all 95 dog tags are on the same enemy. Like, the person that's down looks exactly the same in every single one.
Yeah,
I'd hazard a guess I know exactly which one Tony missed as well, by the way, because I think that 94 of them are pretty obvious to find. I managed to find them all, but they were quite boring. The audio logs, I actually really enjoyed the audio logs. What I could hear, because the audio balance in this game is a little bit weird, because the audio logs are very, very quiet.
And no subtitles. That's
exactly what I was going to say. Like, you don't realize how much, like, subtitles are a relatively recent accessibility addition to the vast majority of games. You don't really have to go back that long to realize when games didn't have them. And this is a game that would have really benefited from them, because it's quite cool when you're listening to the audio logs and you hear them talking about characters like Sebastian Shaw, who's another Marvel character in the universe that, you know, all those kinds of things are there. And I quite like them, but I couldn't necessarily make them all out, and I just wish the subtitles were there.
There's a lot of ways those would be done differently today versus 15 years ago, including being able to go back into a menu and either re-listen to them or check which ones you've found.
Yeah.
Having subtitles on the screen. I think you're absolutely right, Leah. The ability to listen to them and kind of walk away, that's absolutely great, as long as you don't trigger a load into the next area.
Yes, which I did do that a few times, so it's a double-edged sword, I guess. It
stops you going too far, but yeah. I think we probably want to get on to talking about the people that are in this game. Just before we do, just rounding out, I guess, what we've said about gore, I think we've kind of covered everything more or less we have to say about that, but we also had another part of Seth's comment on the forum, which was, I think what made me realize this was different from the usual cash grab fodder was the fact the UK edition of the PS3 Xbox 360 version had a big BBFC 18 rating slapped on the front, back when BBFC ratings were still valid for games. I don't think I've ever seen a game based on a milquetoast family baiting film go so far in the other direction and actually do something interesting. The rating is definitely deserved, as limbs fly and blood spurts, especially when going into rage mode. It's still surprising that the developers took this violent route, but given the film's poor reputation, I guess there was no harm in going all out. Just on that, there was some hesitation. Raven were really like all for it. We need this to be a violent game. They pointed to God of War, but also the character's comic sort of style, and that managed to convince Marvel. Marvel were the ones they had to convince, not Fox, because Marvel are the licensee for Marvel characters, and it's complicated, but it wasn't Fox that they had to convince, it was Marvel, and Marvel agreed. So that's why we got as much gore as we did.
And, you know, Raven were quite known for being quite a violent studio once upon a time. Yep. For the old Soldier of Fortune title.
Yeah, absolutely. So, as mentioned, Hugh Jackman gave his voice and likeness. That was in the form of a full 3D body scan and a load of reference photos used for costuming and stuff like that, rather than any motion capture.
Yeah, I did. So this is really interesting, because I was shocked when I saw the credits that it was actually Hugh Jackman's voice.
And see, I went the other way around, because I at the beginning was like, hey, this guy's doing a decent Hugh Jackman, and then got to the end where I was like, oh, okay.
But it sounded like someone doing a Hugh Jackman. That's kind of like the thing, right? It sounded quite weird, and I was like, it kind of looks like him. But it's like if you get Wolverine from Wish.com. Like, it just didn't quite look right. Especially when you look at Sabretooth. And, you know, I was like, yeah, that's Liv Schreiber. It's like looks like him, sounding like it's his voice.
We have Leif Schreiber at home, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, as mentioned, Leif Schreiber gave his voice and likeness as well. And the third of the triumvirate, the big three that you'd want out of the film, John Wraith, aka Kestrel, not a name he's ever given in the film or game, but that is his name. He's called Wraith and teleports. Good enough, but no Kestrel, apparently. Anyway, that's Marvel, not Raven, that I've got any beef with over that, or Fox. is played in the film by Will.i.am, and sure enough, voice and likeness appear here. Otherwise, no one else from the films appears except Remy LeBeau's character model is clearly based on Tyler Kitsch. I think the Raven Darkholm model looks enough like Rebecca Romijn's version of the character, which was the current version back then. They're not official likenesses, as far as I know. It's not mentioned, at least, and they're not voiced by those people. Mystique doesn't appear in the film, so it wouldn't have made sense to necessarily get her. Otherwise, they are all different. Kayla Silverfox, who I hadn't realised her surname in the comics is not Silverfox. Her character is called Silverfox. Anyway, again, not mentioned that character name in the film. Different voice, but the appearance looks maybe similar enough. I don't know if that's just generic brunette female model, because there are, in the film and in the game, very few female characters, really, in terms of significant characters having Raven added in over and above the film cast. Mystique doubles the significant female characters in either film or game. So again, that just goes to show, watching the film back, it's like Stryker's recruiting mutants, but exclusively men for his military squad. Yeah, sure, it's meant to be like Vietnam era, but also it's a squad of mutants. Why would he care? It's weird. Something that bothers me. I know it wouldn't bother everyone. It bothered me a bit. Yeah, Mystique not in the film, but brought in here. Similarly, Bolivar Trask. So a lot of the flashback stuff it involves Raven. She then turns up in the modern day stuff in the Trask facility to try and rescue John Wraith from there, who's been captured. Yeah, that kind of covers it in terms of characters. I think Hugh Jackman did an okay job. Like, it didn't stand out as bad to me. I knew it was him going in, so I didn't get like any sort of confused you, Leah, and Carl were saying. I knew to expect that. I did think when he's acting alongside some of the other voice actors, you feel a difference between what they're doing and what he's doing. I don't know whether that's he just knows this character well enough and they didn't have much to work with, but nothing stood out as this is groundbreaking in terms of either voice acting or getting, you know, likenesses of real people into the game. It just is what they chose to do.
I mean, it's we've talked about this in a bunch of different episode or volumes, but it's a different thing, right? Voice acting versus screen acting or stage acting, for that matter. And I mean, it's not that one is better than the other or one, it's just different. So if you're putting people who are primarily voice actors with somebody who is primarily a screen actor, then it makes sense to me that it might not quite fit all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of the voices, I was actually surprised at how good Leif Schreiber was, because it felt like a voice actor doing the work. But you know, that's not a knock. It's just we've seen some very good actors come into video games and do very bad jobs. Whereas you've got Chris Edgeley, who's a very experienced voice actor. I wanted to just tear my own ears off hearing, no, mon frère.
I'm going to assume that he is not actually French-Cajun.
Oh, talk about hamming it up.
Some people have difficulty with accents.
Yeah.
Maybe they should have figured that out before they cast him. I don't know.
It's the fact they gave him two words. They gave him au revoir and they gave him mon frère, and he literally tags one of those into, every single thing he says to you, and it's just so annoying.
And completely different from the film, again.
Yeah.
And, like, the thing is, Gambit one of the coolest Marvel characters to ever exist, somehow make him unbearable in both, well, in this game. And it's, yeah, look, I mean, this is, I can't blame Raven on this because it's based on, you know, the characters are based on the movie, and we know that the studio built this movie having a character like Deadpool and then not making it. You know, what's Deadpool famous for? Well, he's famous for talking a lot, and he's famous for his outfit. So they didn't do any of that in the game. And then I think Gambit's one of Stryker's bunch, isn't he, in the flashbacks, the one with the swords that are crossed on his back. And he says like three things in the cutscenes.
No, Gambit's completely separate character.
Not Gambit. Deadpool.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Deadpool. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. So you fight Deadpool at the end of the game, and he goes, "Wade, is that you? I guess you're no longer the merc with a mouth." And it's like he said like two things in the whole game.
They couldn't get Ryan Reynolds.
So it's just, I mean, to have the opportunity to utilize Deadpool in your movie and have that in your game and all these spin-offs and not realize what you had.
Well, I think that's what the movie ended up being known for, is whatever you think of how they treated Wolverine, almost every character they had around him felt like a disservice to what people would have expected of seeing that character on the screen. Sabretooth, I guess not, 100%. Because we'd seen what they did with Sabretooth in the first X-Men film, and at least this was a character. But
Liev Schreiber's a really good Sabretooth.
Yeah. No, I misspoke to not include him, but yeah, Deadpool, Gambit, just not what you would hope to see from those characters. Bad,
And I kind of think I maybe see what they were doing there, because you're literally naming your movie X-Men Origins Wolverine. So you want Wolverine to be the central focus, you know? So you don't want to give all of these other characters the chance to overshadow him.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that you downplay them, you know? That means that you have to make him really, really good so that when you show what these other characters are doing, it still kind of shines. And I don't know. I'm not a comic book writer. I couldn't be a comic book writer because I couldn't keep track of it all. So
it's chaos in it. But I think, you know, you're right. This is Origins, right? So you're introducing all these characters to show the influence on the character Wolverine. Yeah. But then none of those characters have any influence on Wolverine come the end of the movie, because he gets shot in the head with an adamantium bullet and forgets his stuff. So it's all irrelevant.
The other thing is that this was the era of Fox trying to work out how they could spin off every character. Like, there was going to be X-Men Origins Magneto. They wanted Deadpool and Gambit to get spun out into their own series, and that's not the way you start off those characters to get spun out. You know, but my opinion. And the game suffers from that. Whether it's the game suffers because of the film, or whether the game just couldn't work out how to do anything different or better with those characters, I don't know.
Yeah. It's a shame for Wolverine as a character, isn't it? Because obviously, I think most people are probably aware, and it's probably not too much of a spoiler, but obviously, historically, we've had Magneto rip every single bit of adamantium out of Wolverine.
He's done that at least once, maybe a couple of times.
Yeah, we've had the Hulk tear Wolverine in half. Like, you know, there's interesting relationships and fights between Marvel characters. Just, and I mean, especially Sabretooth, but let's ignore all of that for the purpose of this movie and just have a bunch of very average characters that don't really have much of an impact or influence on Wolverine. Yeah. Just, it's, you know, that's, like I say, that's not the game's fault. It can only work within the limits of the movie, which is why something like Insomniac's iteration of Wolverine is so much more interesting, because it's not constrained by the limitations of a very bad, well, very poor movie. I don't say bad, but it's not good. this game could only work with what it was given
in terms of those characters.
Yeah.
So another piece of feedback before we move on. Adam again on our Patreon says, looking back on True Achievements, this was the first game on Xbox 360 that I had taken the time to get 1,000 gamer score in. Congratulations. Whilst I don't have a strong positive opinion regarding the movie, as far as game tie-ins go, this is quite well made, with combat and mechanics of the game being some mindless violent fun, as well as alluding to some interesting theories. My comic knowledge isn't strong enough to know how canonical it is, with Blink and Mystique being Nightcrawler's parents. I think it just goes to show how badly they did John Wraith, that feasibly you could think that was Blink. It wasn't. That was a character called Kestrel instead. I wrote a paragraph about Nightcrawler's parentage. Marvel have changed this so many times, including last year where they completely... I'm not going to read the paragraph.
No, I want you to read the paragraph because it's batshit.
Please do,
because
I've just read it, and it's tremendous.
Right. I love it.
I needed to just get it straight in my head. I thought I knew who his parents were. I was wrong. Originally, Nightcrawler's parents were Mystique and Christian Wagner, hence Kurt Wagner, until it was revealed, this was in 2003, that Mystique had an affair with Azazel, who we have seen in the films in First Class, who was thought to be Nightcrawler's father.
Okay, that's the part where that's where my knowledge ends. I knew about that. Yep. And this next part is where it goes wild.
Yeah. Until it was, I've put revealed last year, I'm going to say retconned last year because comics, that Mystique was also having an affair at this point, with Destiny, and shapeshifted into a man with the combined genetics of Christian Wagner and Azazel to have Nightcrawler with Destiny. And then I've put for now, I guess, because wait until someone says differently, I suppose.
Mind blown.
That sounds like I'm poking fun at comics. That's the nature of comics. They are decades-long stories that end up being rewritten either as different timelines, different versions of characters, or they retcon stuff. In this case, it is that they're retconning stuff, but kind of trying to keep it almost in line with what happened previously, or at least consistent in some way. But, in this game, they have a teleporter, and they have someone who is blue, and they say, well, they're in a relationship, pops out Nightcrawler, why not? Makes some sort of sense. It's not in the films, it's not really discussed or clear or hinted at or anything. Azazel is in there in First Class, and Mystique's kind of on the same side as him at one point, but there's no relationship suggested. Previous to that, Mystique and Nightcrawler were together in a scene in X2, and all we saw was she tells him she shouldn't have to hide and therefore wants to stay in her blue form, and he seems to be kind of impressed by that, like he seems like won over by that argument. But there is no, a bit like Sabretooth and Wolverine in the first X-Men film, they don't touch on the character's background because they just don't have time or interest in getting into it, so it's just not mentioned. So it doesn't matter about your comic knowledge. Nobody would know this stuff unless you're really up on your Nightcrawler specific lore. It's wild. Anyway, that's the sort of level of research I was going into for your ears, dear listener, I suppose. So we've kind of touched on story. It's more or less the film beats, but they compress scenes together in weird ways that don't, as Tony says, kind of follow through on what the film was trying to do. They miss scenes out altogether. They introduce a lot, like the flashback stuff with how Wolverine ends up in Team X and then out of Team X. They extend that into a whole flashback sequence with hundreds of enemies pouring on top of Wolverine to try and stop him doing, like, destroying a couple of radio towers. It's weird. There's inconsistencies between what the game does, but then there's inconsistencies with the film anyway, so it's kind of messy, I think is fair to say. I don't necessarily want to go through any of, I have put out bullet points for all of the chapters here for what you did and which bosses you fought. I think we've kind of covered it, mm-hmm. unless anyone has any.
No, I'm glad you put them, because I can't remember a lot of this, and I only did it 2 days ago.
Well, this Google Doc will remain accessible for you, Carl, to revisit this whenever you choose.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So before we get into what I thought was going to be the central discussion of this episode, but putting the notes together quickly realized was not going to be, we have another forum post from Andrew Elmore. I kept this all as one post, so it's fairly long, but I think it's a nice sort of summary of everything we've discussed up to this point. So Andrew says, I remember this title being touted as a better-than-you-might-expect sort of experience in its day, but I never actually played it until somewhat recently, when I was revisiting a lot of Western action games and shooters from the 360 PS3 catalogues earlier on in the pandemic. I'm not interested in comics or anything, but I am interested in the works of Raven Software, one of my favourite studios until they were cruelly collapsed into the Call of Duty machine one day, never to return. I found a PS3 copy at Pink Gorilla Games, nice shout out, here in Seattle for a decent price and took it for a few spins. It's not the best nor most performant game in the world. See previous comments from Carl and Leah. And you can see that all the rough edges imposed by the restrictions of shipping a game to coincide with the release date of a film, a task that has become functionally impossible now. We'll get there. It's unpolished, framey, and repetitive, but it's also satisfying and appropriately vicious. X-Men, Origins, Wolverine, the comic book, the movie, the video game. Nice. Tip the hat for that one. Is a textbook example of an exceptionally talented team put in a position where they just aren't able to deliver their best work. There's an air of super competence under the uneven surface of dark, choppy waters. I'd love to see a version of this game that got an extra 6 to 12 months of time in the oven with Raven at the height of their power. I do want to check out the PSP conversion now, though. I bet it's probably not great, but I'm open to being pleasantly surprised. Leon's got my PSP, so I couldn't do that. I could have emulated it, but I couldn't do it natively. So give it back, Leon. So I've put in bold, giant letters in the middle of this. Question for the panel. It's kind of a doubleheader. Is this a good X-Men and or Origins Wolverine game? And the context for that question, I'm not expecting an answer right away. That'll be in the summaries. The context for that is what I consider movie tie-ins. Now, we're not talking about movie adaptations into video games. Like I made the point earlier, I think, that GoldenEye came out 2 years after the film did. That's an adaptation. It's not a tie-in. It's not meant to be released at the same time as part of the marketing push for the film. We used to have those. I don't know whether they were released quite day and date, but reskinned platformers like Lion King and Aladdin, the reskin's harsh, but the idea was, we know how to make a platformer. There's a film coming out that's Aladdin or Lion King. We can put models into that game and roughly make it look like something that ties in with this film. That's my memory of the 1990s. 2000s, it's a lot of comic book stuff, so the Spider-Man games tied in with those films. We've discussed the X-Men games kind of tying in. X-Men, the original, didn't, but X2 didn't, and this did. Wanted Weapons of Fate is one I remember because I don't quite have Tony's affliction for achievements, but I ended up playing that for the achievements. Not my finest 1,000 gamer score either. And then I've put in post-Arkham because I think Carl made a salient point earlier, which is we had X-Men Origins Wolverine in 2009, which we'll get to, came out just after the MCU had started, but Sega made an Iron Man game, a Thor game, and a Captain America game that weren't adaptations of the films, but tied into the films. They were meant to release at the same time. And after that, I think someone mentioned earlier, the Wii era, yeah, there was like Kung Fu Panda games and stuff like that. That was definitely the era of this game and trying to have a fairly big, fairly like mainstream console game to release alongside a film. And I really struggle now. I'm sure there are examples, but I think more of like there might be a mobile game tie-in or something. I really struggle to think of big blockbuster games that try to release alongside a film as part of the marketing. I mean, in all honesty, there aren't that many games now that adapt movie storylines, it feels like. It's more like, okay, Insomniac's doing Spider-Man. There are Spider-Man films, but they're not in conjunction with one another. They definitely benefit from both being around. Mario last year, the film came out. People may have expected a game alongside it. There wasn't. Wonder came out 6 months later and wasn't anything to do with the film. It just doesn't seem to happen. I've written down Lego because they do direct adaptations, but they don't tie in with release dates. And even when they have kind of tried to get somewhere similar, like Skywalker Saga was never really going to release and ended up really not releasing alongside those films. It just feels like the era of movie tie-ins is just gone.
Yeah, I think it's a kind of a sign of the priority of a lot of studios that they will still do tie-ins to movies, but like you were saying, James, it's not usually. Like they prioritize the act, like they will pick up something that was, or I mean, it still is, the movies didn't go away, but a movie that came out in some cases many years ago. The one I'm thinking about, I was kind of skimming through a Wikipedia article of just various tie-in licensed games. And the most recent one that I think really was of any size was that RoboCop Rogue City game that came out really recently.
Yeah.
And I mean, RoboCop came out in what, the early 80s? Like it's not a game. I mean, it is definitely a tie-in to the movie, but it's not it's a
franchise.
Yeah, exactly.
IP, you know, type.
So they don't So I mean, there isn't. It's kind of a stereotype, right? That licensed games are typically kind of bad, especially the ones that come out that are forced to come out. during the release cycle of the film. But now I don't think they have maybe that same kind of reputation because people are not, the time pressures aren't necessarily there for the most part, or at least not for the ones that we see. I mean, I'm sure there's a ton of like mobile games and that kind of thing that are still going that kind of go under those rules. But something like that RoboCop game, or there was a Friday the 13th multiplayer thing. I don't know how good it was, but you know, that was pretty recent and not tied into a current film.
But I guess Avatar, the end of last year, there was the Avatar game, but that wasn't to tie in with The Way of Water. It was a side story that happened at the same time as the
event. But even that missed the actual release of the film.
Yeah, it was nowhere near the release date.
The spin-offs are so more highly regarded these days, aren't they? Because like Leo was saying, that there was that reputation, wasn't there, that movie tie-ins suck, and that's because the vast majority of them did, you know.
I don't know what you mean. You didn't think of the good 1995's ones White Men Can't Jump for the Atari 2600. Or no, I'm sorry. This is for the Jaguar. The Jaguar.
The Jaguar. The Toy Story and, you know, maybe Lion King are the rare ones. But then you've got, you quite fondly remembered is Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, which I don't think released with the movie, but is a really well thought of game. And then you've got, look, on topic for this podcast, the Ghostbusters game, which was heavily tied into the first movie and like the second
arguably the third in the Ghostbusters stories at that point, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think for a lot of people, it has kind of made it into canon. So I think taking something away from the burden, and I think it's probably fair to say it is a burden for the release of a movie, can result in a much better title that can be designed in a way that delivers a story a bit superior, because a game is 6 to 12 hours and a movie is 90 to 120 minutes. It's quite hard to kind of align those two things. Yeah. And I think, you know, I've alluded to the fact several times making points throughout this podcast that I think that this game and Raven were kind of hamstrung by what we got out of that movie. I mean, there's a point that I'll certainly make around the time frame in my final wrap up as well that is kind of counter to some of the things.
I think my two cents is I think just both industries, both the video game industry and the film industry in particular, have changed significantly over the years. You know, the film industry, you know, say what you want, has had a real hard time. Certainly the cinema side of stuff. A lot of stuff now is, you know, obviously goes on to video on demand at a super quick rate. You know, that's almost where the money's now to be made from a lot of these places, and it's like, are you tying a video game into what section of that? And I just think video games have made a huge, you know, if we think about where they were looking at this and where they are now, you know, video games have been trying to ape films seemingly for a very long time. They now have the capabilities of not only aping films, actually, you know, at some respects being better than, well, we've known this for a long, but you know, if you're just looking at what they're trying to represent as a film, they can do visually pretty damn close to what a film can represent, and they can, you know, go a bit sometimes a bit even further and embrace a bit, you know, a bit more deeper into those storylines. But it's just licensing, isn't it? I think some of this comes down to, you know, even if you look at, you know, wildly successful Spider-Man series from Sony, you look at the Marvel licensing deal there. Sony, okay, they give them the likenesses of these characters, which obviously plays a huge part into how well does that sell. But, you know, Sony needs to give them $100 million for that privilege, which is, equally, you've got to sell a lot of copies to make back. If you look at something like this X-Men game here now, you know, if you're saying it across all those platforms, it sold 2.2 million copies. What does an X-Men license cost you now? I mean, as we know from the leaked documents, it cost you about $150 million. That just, it doesn't work like that. It
doesn't work.
But I do think my think of two points is Mad Max, one of my all-time favorite video games that it was kind of not with the film, kind of tangentially linked to the film, but really, really good game. But if I'm thinking one that was day and date with the film, Captain America Super Soldier was a really, really good video game. It just happened to be kind of around that film time.
Oh, Don, you'll give
no, it's it, it, honestly, it's one of my favorite, you know, kind of, I don't know, action game.
That really was The Last Hurrah. Tony's actually nominating that one next time.
That was a couple of years after this. It really was The Last Hurrah for this. And I think, yeah, there's a combination of factors. So in researching this, X-Men Origins Magneto died because of the first round of writers and actors strikes in America. That made the predictability of movie and TV schedules difficult, which then meant tying games into them was difficult. It's also the era where HD gaming, as we know, that ramped up the development costs massively. And then on top of that, license costs got more, as we've just said, Carl, you've just said, license costs got more. And getting an actor to appear in a video game is not just the case of necessarily, oh, just write it into the contract for their film that they'll also do this. Now it's, no, you need to negotiate that separately, and so that becomes an extra expense on top of that. And game development expense has just got so large that you can't then rush the game to be out because it doesn't work that financially.
But I also think, if you think about culture as well, like, you know, I can base this off seeing my two daughters grow up. You know, the kids in the playground, they're not going off to see whatever film it is and they think that they're all talking about Fortnite. They're all talking about Roblox. They're all talking about Call of Duty. They're all... And I think about movie tie-in games. They were there to capture somebody that walked into a store. People don't walk into a store and look on the shelf now at just a video game.
Something monoculture.
It's like it has massively shifted. So I think IP of popular franchises, be it films, books, whatever it may be, is still critical and still being fantastic.
Oh, more than it was back.
But it doesn't rely on the advertising of a piece of media from. A time to make a good game. It relies on the game being a good game. If the game's not a good game, it can, even something like, you know, thinking Marvel Midnight Suns, you know, if you talk about the kind of into that, and it just completely naturally, you know, failed and cost millions to as a failure. But it's a really good game, but it just didn't hit in the right phase. So.
If we're talking about a culture shift, right, we're talking 15 years ago, movies are still a big thing now, but movies were the everything then. Games no longer have to kowtow to movies in the same way TV series don't have to kowtow to movies. TV series, look at the actors that you're getting into TV series now. That was seen as the death knell, wasn't it, for actors if they had to go and take a TV role now. Now they're opting to do those and streaming deals ahead of major blockbuster movies. And games are bigger than them all. I mean, we're talking in this week, it's been announced that the latest Monopoly game that's 10 months old has made $2 billion. What movie doesn't wish that it could make $2 billion? You know what I mean?
Or anybody that's probably listening to the show, tell me your favourite game of all time. It's not going to be based on a movie franchise. I guarantee you it's going to be someone's The Last of Us or Mario or something that is fundamentally gaming. So is it a loss to the bigger part of the industry that we don't have a ton of movie tie-in games? There was a time and period I kind of liked just, you know, expanding beyond a piece of media that be it book or literature. You know, a lot of that stuff still is in place now, but I don't need it to be, is this a representation of the film I've just watched? No, I don't care. Like, is this a good representation of the character? Absolutely. Like, is Spider-Man a good game because it's about the Spider-Man universe? It doesn't need to be about the Spider-Man films that have just been. No, it doesn't. In fact, it's probably a hell of a lot better because it's not about the Spider-Man films. So, ultimately.
Yeah. It puts throwbacks in, doesn't it? Like little references where you go, oh, that's about the movie, but it's not so intrinsically linked to the movie that they're allowed to be free. And I think this was coming at an end where it was just limited. I think if this game had come 5 years later, we might have, you know, it would probably have had a little bit more freedom. In a world post what I suppose, I don't know what the big motivator for the change was. I would hazard a guess Grand Theft Auto 5 was probably a big part of it when it just started producing billions a year. That made, you know, games a relevant medium all on its own right for these things. But yeah, I mean, is it a bad movie tie-in game?
But even then, I think...
but it is a movie tie-in game.
As you said, Carl, Batman Arkham Asylum was a bit of a pivot of that was going to be a tie-in with Batman Begins, and that just didn't work out, went a different way. Rocksteady made their own... At least that's my memory of it. Apologies if that's not correct. But that went a different way, became its own thing, became its own hugely successful franchise, and showed the power that the IP, the franchises, the characters have, and it doesn't need to be movie related. And yeah, absolutely good shout. Fortnite is where movies go to make sure they've got something there that ties into the film. You get your skins in when the next Marvel film comes out. They have the skins in Fortnite to tie in with it, or Star Wars, or, you know, John Wick, whatever it might be. I put in some information about Legacy here. The long and the short of it is Wolverine's still in loads of games. There was a bit of a dip in terms of X-Men games being licensed after MCU started. X-Men Destiny didn't go well, sorry.
It wasn't great.
But Wolverine continued to be in loads. 26 more games, increasingly some mobile and online, but loads of games, other games with the Marvel license. And obviously now we're, I think, all anticipating in the next couple of years, probably, Insomniac's Wolverine game. I don't know if this game is to that what Spider-Man 2 Neversoft's game kind of was to Insomniac Spider-Man, as the kind of, that's the bar we need to clear people's memory of Spider-Man 2 and how well Swinging Around went there. I don't know if this is to that, but it kind of felt, that's why I wanted to discuss this, because it kind of felt like this is the game people point to for Wolverine.
So I would argue that Marvel's Spider-Man is the bar for Wolverine to clear at this point. Yeah. I don't think people are remembering that this game even, that X-Men Origins Wolverine even existed, honestly.
Well, that's why we're here, to remind them, Leah.
Well, yeah, but what I'm saying is...
Yeah, no, I get I agree.
I understand our very important role in this, but yeah, I think that people expect something different from superhero games at this point, and Spider-Man was and is such a huge success that I think people are going to be looking to something like that, especially given that it's also Insomniac. So I think that that's what people are going to expect, something along those lines.
So Wolverine continued to be in plenty of games since this game came out, but he's also continued to be in plenty of films, both Fox's film series, but also his own, Fox's X-Men series, but also his own films. And is going to be in Deadpool and Wolverine, hence the reason for doing this, probably within a few months of you listening to this episode. That's kind of the legacy of where we're at, and I guess we're kind of on pause to see what happens with Wolverine in film, but also how Insomniac's game goes. Okay. Each and every week as we record, on the day of recording, at about midday UK time, Leon kindly sends out a request for 3-word reviews from our X channel, Twitter channel, at Kane and Rince, and you kindly obliged. We received some. I will kick us off with SMG Studio, who says, intro is fire emoji. That's still 3 words, but it's, you get it.
It's 2 words and an image, but, you know, pedantry aside, but that's what you get when you hire Blur Studios. Robert Farley says, God of Wolverine. That's, you gave me that one on purpose.
Quiet Paul says, retractable claw fun. There's an exclamation mark, which is why I did the fun.
Yeah. I like that. I liked it.
Good.
Rich Stone from True Achievements said, can't really remember. Now, normally we wouldn't allow that as any kind of form of free word, because really it's not that great. But it's that only becomes because I met up with Rich and we were having a game of squash the other day, and I said, oh, we're covering X-Men Wolverine game. And it's like, oh man, I love that game. And then I questioned why he loved that game, and he couldn't remember a single thing that happened in it other than he remember loving that game. So yeah, hence the free review of can't really remember.
I figured it was a Wolverine amnesia pun, but if there's also a background story, then I will gladly take it. Thank you, Rich. And finally, I'll wrap us off with David Giza, who says, absolutely, perfectly adequate. So, we've heard from you kind community members giving us feedback. Thank you very much for that. And it's time for us to wrap up how we feel. I think I've gone maybe most negative to least negative, kind of how I wanted to go. So we'll start off with Leah first.
I'm not used to being the most negative one on something. I like a lot of stuff, but yeah, I didn't really care for this. It's kind of a shame because, like I said, I do remember enjoying this game, and I don't think it's a complete waste of my time or anything like that. I can't say that I recommend seeking it out. If you already have a copy, then you probably already know whether you enjoy it or not. But it's so kind of back shelved with regards to access to the game right now that I just don't think it's necessarily worth it to go seeking one out if you don't already have it. It's buggy, it's confusing story-wise, it's kind of monotonous, and it did I mention that it's buggy? Because it's buggy. This is, for the time that it came out, I don't think that this was a bad game. I think that it still had issues even at that point, but it was at least entertaining. Now, I just think that even if you are the world's biggest Wolverine fan, maybe just hold off a little bit and see what Insomniac does, because I don't know that it's going to be better than this, but I have suspicions that it's going to be better than this. So, if you have ways and means, and you would like to find a copy of this somehow, then, you know, I guess you could still do worse, but I would not recommend it. I think that there's quite a bit more superhero material out there for you if you are so inclined, and much better third person character action, you know, slashy, hitty, cutty things. But this one has, we skipped this in the notes, this one has a reference to Portal, though. Did you guys see the cake? Isn't that funny? You remember Portal? Yeah. Portal was a better game. I yeah.
Like it's 2009 all over again.
Oh, and Lost.
And Lost and World of Warcraft. All the hits from 15
yep.
years ago.
there was they certainly did do that. So yeah, there's no thank you is kind of where I'm going with this.
Hey, Lost was a good video game tie. Actually, no, it was pretty bad.
No, I'm pretty sure that was just one of the ones that you remember because it was one of those really easy to get 1,000 achievement points in.
Yep, there we go.
Uh-huh. No, it wasn't. No.
Are you sure? Because I'm pretty sure I was working at GameStop around that time, and I'm pretty sure that was one of the ones where all you had to do was play through all the chapters.
To be fair, I played WoW for 5 years as well, but, you know.
Well, so did I. So did everybody.
Okay. Don't look at my gamer tag. Okay, Carl, you're going to tell us that absolutely people should play this game, right?
No, don't. so I had a lot of the same problems as Leah, really. It was just very buggy and glitchy, and yes, we both played it on the PlayStation 3, and, you know, obviously Leah had played it before on the Xbox 360, and to be fair, I reckon if I'd left it there, it might have been a more positive memory. It's very much of the time, right? Like, it's a movie tie-in game that's an action brawler. There's kind of a lot of them. And this tried to do some things that were moderately interesting. But what I would say is that I think the extension in development time probably counted against it, because there's a lot of fluff in there that would have been better being gone, where new techniques come into the game, like ziplining about 3/4 of the way through the game, and then suddenly you're just ziplining all over the place. And yeah, there's just a lot of stuff and a lot of filler that didn't need to be there, and it would be a better product without it all. A lot of unnecessary fights and time traveling back to Mayan temple areas, and which is Africa, apparently. And that kind of stuff, just, it really didn't sit well, and I was kind of expecting it to just be better than it was, given that it does have a bit of a reputation that this isn't just like your everyday movie tie-in, when actually the reality is it did just feel a lot like a movie tie-in with a cool regeneration system that kind of works. But look, there are some good things in there. Notably, Blur Studios doing the FMV stuff was, it kind of stood out because it did look really good. And they are, I suppose, the best at what they do. Given the cost and the accessibility of trying to access it and it being non-digital, I'd just say I wouldn't bother. You can get better games for less money. And, 15 years probably hasn't been the kindest to this. I didn't hate it. I didn't like it. It kind of, it's... No. James, pick better games, man.
Thanks, Carl. Tony, how about you?
It's funny actually listening to Carl talk there, because it reminds me of some of the logic puzzles which we didn't really talk about within the actual main game, which was, you need to pull a cog or jump on a platform and raise a platform to get across. And a couple of times it's like, this gate is made out of wood. Why am I doing a 15-minute logic puzzle when I could just, I don't know, slice through the wood?
Hey. I mean, there's literally nothing that should be blocking Wolverine's way at any point in this game.
Do those guys with the shields just have adamantium shields? Because otherwise, I should be able to cut through those. Anyway, I'm sorry.
But,
continue.
although I jest there, that actually probably plays perfectly into a summary, which is welcome to your kind of typical hack and slash 2009 game, which is it's got some platforming, it's got some slashing, it's got a robust enough combat system. I think probably for the time, seeing Wolverine as a character is, a violent impictation of Wolverine as a character was probably more exciting than maybe it is now. But it's just it felt playing it now really by the numbers. And I don't know if that would have been any different in 2009. And actually, I don't think it was, because I'm thinking about, okay, well, what came out around that time? And classics like Bioshock in 2007, which, I know they're two completely different games, but I think with what it was given, it probably could have done more. But listening to the stories of, truncated, development time, even maybe not for its own fault because of the film, it probably makes sense that it came out as a bit of a mess. What is more interesting to me is its legacy of a game that was actually really solid from then, because I don't really feel like that's many of our experiences playing it now. Maybe 15 years has been a bit more rough on it than we think. But overall, it's the kind of game I've just played over the last couple of weeks, gone through a couple of levels, not been insulted by it, but not been wowed in any way by it. It's just past the time. And how, honestly, as you get older, you realise your time's more precious than playing something like this, just to pass the time, because I've got 1,000 other things that, should be above and ahead of this list. So, thanks for that, James. That was,
three happy customers. I'm absolutely going to apologize, but I think we've had an interesting discussion talking about this game and its kind of place in history, because the reason I picked this was I felt like this was going to be like just before 2018's Spider-Man game came out, going back to look at Spider-Man 2 again and see why people liked it, because my memory of this was I enjoyed this game way more than I did the film. And my memory of other people's reaction to it, I think, there's people making videos a year ago about how much they enjoyed this game compared to the film still. It still has that legacy of, this was better than expected based on having seen the film. That's not necessarily high praise.
It's a low bar, isn't it? Yeah.
But I definitely expected that we were going to have a fun discussion about a game we all kind of enjoyed. And I'm not remotely surprised by the reactions, having played it. I, after 105 hours of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, was quite happy this week to just have this game to pick away at, two-hour chunks here and there, and just enjoy for what it is, knowing it'd be over in 10 hours or 8 hours or whatever it was. But aside from quite enjoying the combat, it's a bit mashy, not challenging in the way I wanted it to be. It probably could have been if I'd stuck to my guns a bit more. But I kind of do still see why in 2009 it was like, that was kind of a time for demonizing movie tie-ins. It was shovelware on the Wii. It was stuff that was just put out the door to kind of get something out alongside a film with the name on it. And this felt like, coming from Raven, being competently playing, I didn't run into the sort of bugs either now or then that Leah and Carl, you did. That's not to say they're not there. They clearly are. But yeah, I thought more of this game then than I do now. And I think a big part of that, I think, Carl, you hit the nail on the head. I think Batman Arkham Asylum comes out months after this game and kind of shows what you can do with a character if you're not tied to a movie, and you can take a studio like Rocksteady, who at the time were no more accomplished than Raven were then, are now, it's still a great studio, and and just let them fly with it. Let fans of this character fly with it. And I hope, as Leah, you said, I hope that's what we get from Insomniac. I hope they take the expertise they've got from Spider-Man, the love they have for the character, the different flavor that this character has, and do something with it. I, even as much as I enjoyed then and still kind of got something out of this game, it's so hard to play this game unless you happen to have a PS3 or a 360 that is still functional sitting around, and probably £20 to £30 or dollars to go and buy a copy potentially. That's a lot of investment, let alone the 10 hours that I've asked of all three of you. So it's weird, but I'm glad we got to have a discussion about what movie tie-in games are, because they are just a rare thing these days. And this one kind of has such an interesting, I think, story of development and how it got to be, and whether it could have been better with more time, or Carl, as you said, actually it needed reining back a bit. I think this game has a reputation that maybe now, as it sits in 2024, it doesn't deserve, but I see why it got it in 2009, hence wanting to talk about it. And hopefully, we've had an interesting chat and entertained you lovely listeners. Hopefully you're not all having played the game as well, cursing my name too. So, all that remains is for me to thank Leah, Carl, and Tony for playing the game and coming to talk about it. Editor Jay for editing, as always, as well as our correspondents, everyone who provided feedback via all the different methods, and of course, each and every one of you for listening. Next time, in issue 613, find out if redemption stories really are the stuff dreams are made of, or a nightmare of our own design, as Leon, Jay, yes, Jay, Rich and Ryan brain dance their way through the dystopian past, present and future of Cyberpunk 2077's Night City. See you next week, Samurai.